Next case is 03-1194, State of Ohio versus John W. Smith. Mr. Perry.
May it please the court and counsel. Good morning. My name is Greg Perry, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant, the State of Ohio. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. The issue before the court today is the correct interpretation of a sexually violent predator in relation to the enhanced sentencing provisions of Revised Code Chapter 2971. Both sides in this case would agree that 2971-01-H1 defines a sexually violent predator to be a person who has been convicted of or pleaded guilty to committing a sexually violent offense on or before the effective date of the statute and is likely to engage in future sexually oriented offenses. The real question is the timing. Must the conviction on the sexually violent offense occur or exist prior to the indictment being tried? Must it exist at the time that the specification is alleged in the indictment, or need it only occur at the time that exists at the time that the specification is presented to the finder of fact? The plain language of 2971 makes it very evident that the legislature intended that the conviction on a sexually violent offense need only exist at the time the specification is presented to the finder of fact. First statute that would indicate the plain language is 2971-02, which determines who will determine the specification and when. And this is an important distinction from other specifications that elevate sentences. The sexually violent predator specification requires a bifurcated hearing. The finder of fact must first determine guilt on the underlying offense, and then and only then, if there's a guilty verdict, can it consider the specification. Other specifications, for example, the firearm specification, there isn't any more proof necessary for the finder of fact to determine the specification. You prove that by proving the underlying offense. But in this case, when the specification is presented to the finder of fact, the issues get broader, and they're much different than just determining if the person's guilty. Now the finder of fact must determine, is this person a risk to public safety? 2971-03, again, makes it very clear that the sentence can only be enhanced if there's a guilty verdict on the underlying offense and the accompanying specification.
At the time the indictment is filed, what is the language that is used to charge the predator specification?
That is in 2941-148, and basically it says that the indictment must include a specification that the offender is a sexually violent predator.
Okay, so what did you say in your indictment? When you indicted this gentleman, what did your specification language say in the indictment?
The grand jurors further find and specify that the defendant is a sexually violent predator. It's that simple.
But that indictment presumes that to be a sexually violent predator, he has a conviction.
That's what the Court of Appeals below held. However,
So you're charging an indictment on future findings, not on present findings.
The purpose of the specification requiring the grand jury to make that specification in the indictment is one, just to comply with due process, to put the defendant on notice that his sentence may be elevated. It's not a finding that the elements currently exist. If you follow that to its natural extension.
Shouldn't they be charging that he may become a violent predator instead of he is, because he isn't at the time of the charge?
And still convicted. And if you follow that to its natural conclusion, we'd have the same problem with the repeat violent offender specification. Like the sexually violent predator specification, it has two elements. Both of those specifications are similar in that they are focused on the individual character traits of the offender. The first element is that the person has been convicted of, is about to be sentenced for a violent offense. That must be alleged in the indictment that the person is a repeat violent offender, when they're not a repeat offender at that point because their conviction has not been determined.
But that language is about to be sentenced. That doesn't exist in this indictment.
The about to be sentenced phrase that you're referring to in that specification is to distinguish that from the other element, which is the previous conviction. In that case, the legislature made it very clear when they're talking about the prior offense, it uses the word previously to indicate it's talking about a separate case.
So you would deny that this specification is in the category of a repeat offender?
I would deny. An enhanced sentence based on prior conduct is its potential effect. It's not its primary purpose. If it were simply a repeat offender law, then there would not be any need for the factors under 297101H2.
Because you can hardly call this a repeat offender when they only have one conviction.
I would agree with that that's not necessarily, it's factually specific on the case. It just depends on the defendant. In this case, there was a prior conviction, but in other cases, there may not be. The other factors may indicate that the person is a risk to public safety without there ever having been a conviction on a sexually violent offense. Also, the legislature would not have gone to the lengths it did to put in the discretion of the adult parole authority and the trial court. In this case, as an example, the defendant was given a sentence of 7 years to life. The 7 years is the minimum of the indefinite sentence, and the 7 years is selected by the trial court of the range of sentences available. That represents punishment for what the offender did. After that is the indefinite part, and that's where the discretion kicks in, where the adult parole authority must conduct hearings on a periodic basis after 7 years, and then every 2 years afterwards, they have to do a current risk assessment. If they determine that the person is not a risk to others, then it can turn supervision of the sentence over to the trial court. The trial court likewise must hold hearings. If the trial court determines that they're not a risk to other people and is not likely to commit another sexually violent offense, it can even terminate the prison sentence. If they were just trying to punish people for repeat offenders, they wouldn't have put that in there. From the point that they serve their minimum sentence at that point on, they're being incarcerated, but only if it's necessary to protect the public. Once the trial court determines that that's no longer necessary, they can be downgraded from a state correctional facility, and can even their prison sentence can be terminated. At those hearings, the issue is not have we sufficiently punished this person for all the horrible things that they've done. The issue is this person a risk to others, and is this person likely to commit future sexually violent offenses? And the statute requires assessments to be conducted to indicate the risk factor.
An affirmance here really doesn't impede the prosecutor that much, does it? I mean, you can bring an affirmance in this case of the Court of Appeals and trial court does not really impede the prosecution of persons for being sexually, whatever you want to call them, all these classifications of sexual predators, does it? I mean, you can bring, if he's convicted here in this case, then you have the option certainly of bringing a new case or an indictment, don't you, for declaring him to be a...
If you follow the reasoning of the Court of Appeals below and require that there be to insert by interpretation the word previously into the definition and require a prior conviction, that's exactly the opposite of what the General Assembly was trying to prevent. They don't want sexually violent predators to strike again. They want to be able to stop them based on their likelihood of future conduct from committing these type of offenses.
Word previously is not in that definition of sexually violent offender.
That is correct. It is not, and that is a good point.
The General Assembly put the word previously in a number of sections, but it didn't put it in that one.
And I think that's very important. By my count, there were 34 criminal statutes that elevate the sentence based on a prior conviction.
The real question is, how many times do you want an individual to commit a violent sexual offense such as rape before you convict him of being a sexually violent offender? Is it one time, or is it more than one time? Isn't that the issue?
That is the issue. And
and your view is, on the first conviction, if the court makes the determination of a likelihood of future activity, it may find him to be a sexually violent offender.
That is correct.
On one conviction. Correct.
In some cases, that could be the case. It's not the case in this case, but it could happen.
Yes.
I don't know what kind of evidence there would be of the other factors being present, but this specification isn't for everybody that commits a sexually violent offense. It's only for those offenders where there is compelling proof that they're going to be a threat to public safety.
Well, what would the word previously add to this definition? Sexually violent predator means a person who has been convicted of or pleaded guilty to committing on or before January 1st sexually violent offense. Who has been convicted? Should the General Assembly should have been previously convicted?
That's what the Court of Appeals held below, that by interpretation, it means previously. Prior to the indictment, they were convicted of a sexually violent offense. And that would lead to an absurd result.
But why do you need the word previously to define what the General Assembly intended? Convicted means that's past tense, is it? Is it not?
It is past tense, but past tense in relation to when? At the time the indictment is filed or at the time the specification is presented to the finder of fact?
Well, one would think that if you're charging someone with something that in the statute says here's the definition of what you're charging, the charge has to relate to the definition that the General Assembly is given us. I mean, maybe we don't like it, but that's what the General Assembly has said.
But if you look at the provisions of Chapter 2971 itself, the plain language, they make it very clear that the legislature's intent was to allow it, the specification to be proven by the underlying conviction on the sexually violent offense. Otherwise, it would lead to an absurd result. The first factor, H2A, the finder of fact is guided to whether there are two or more convictions in separate cases of sexually violent offenses. Well, that would be built in if we required a previous conviction, and then the one that the finder of fact just convicted the person on, there's two automatically. That would lead to a superfluous language in the statute that wouldn't make any sense. It requires the state to wait for the very outcome that it's trying to prevent, that the General Assembly is trying to prevent, and that is a sexually violent predator striking a second time. It would also have an impact if the court followed that line of thinking, that would also have an adverse impact on the repeat violent offender specification, which again requires that the person, one of the elements is that the person has been convicted of or pleaded guilty to a violent offense and is about to be sentenced for. We have to allege something that hasn't occurred yet. So if that's a grand jury determination, the grand jury cannot, the statute could not be applied in situations because it's going to be legally impossible. And that would be an absurd result. What does make sense is that the plain language indicates that, and there haven't been any court decisions specifically on this point other than this case below and the Third District, which the Fifth District followed in the Rigel case. Other courts, and particularly the Eighth and Ninth Districts, they've had cases where they were reviewing the specification and describing the operation of how the specification works. They hint that the specification can be proved by the underlying sexually violent offense. This court in Jones, in analyzing the impact of an acquittal on the specification, basically hinted at the same thing. In that case, the defendant Jones did not have a prior conviction. The only one that was before the court was the one that he'd been tried on, and the prosecutor was using that as a basis for the specification. As I indicated, there are, by my count, 34 criminal statutes that elevate the sentence. One of those, the DUI statute, is kind of different because it's based on how many offenses in particular determines the penalty. But of the other remaining 33, they all say previously. Now, some of them say previously have been convicted or pleaded guilty to. Some of them just say previously have been convicted. The legislature is not always consistent. This court is analyzed what the legislature means when they put conviction on the same level as the same playing field as a plea. But it is interesting, it is important to note that in every single one of those cases, they do mention the word previously. In this case, they did not. For example, in the domestic violence, as an example, domestic violence is elevated to a felony on a second offense. The statute says previously has been convicted. They're obviously referring to a judgment of conviction there because as a prosecutor, how can I possibly elevate someone's sentence if they have not been sentenced on the underlying offense? Unless you know, they could always back out and withdraw their plea. And
counsel, isn't the fact that in order to determine the likelihood of a repeat offense, which is something that the trial court needs to take into consideration, correct?
Yes.
The language is the person has been convicted of two or more times in separate criminal actions of a sexually oriented offense.
That is an important factor, yes.
Right, that's one of the factors. So they are, and then they go on to, talk about a time different than the actual offense for which the sentencing is being, taken place and the designation is being considered. So it is language like that that suggests to the, you know, the entire statutory scheme there for this particular designation that it's more than just this one offense.
That is correct. If it's not a prior conviction, it has to be something else in that offender's past that makes them the future likelihood of harm or...
They talk about convictions as one of the things to be taken.
One of the things to be considered,
right, and
yes.
Then we've got a host of other things. But what I'm saying is, you know, it's dispositive, I think, of the thought process here that it's not just this instant case that will trigger that.
You're talking about the prior conviction triggering it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you say prior, you say convicted. When is it relevant when you can start using the past tense as opposed to, does that mean a prior separate? Well, this consideration language guiding the court and what to take, talk specifically, prior convictions, separate and apart.
Right, and going back to 297102, which requires the bifurcation, the relevant time period is when the specification is being presented to the finder of fact, then it's past tense. Both of them are. If there's a previous case, they can consider that, and then the one that they just considered is now in the past tense, and that is something that the legislature wanted them to consider and have that available to prove the conviction on. Of a sexually violent offense.
You've used your time, Mr.
President. Yes, the state would request the court to give the plain language in H1 its fair meaning and uphold the purpose of Megan's Law by overturning the Court of Appeals and affirming the trial court's verdicts and sentences on the sexually violent offender specifications. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hare.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. In State versus Jones a couple years ago, the court discussed the distinctions between the sexual predator law and the sexually violent predator law and noted that they are indeed quite distinct. So as much as the state will labor to try and convince you that this is really just an extension of Megan's Law, it's not. Its primary purpose is to enhance the sentence and consequently, the court's case law and Ohio statutory law has to be applied accordingly. And first and foremost, because this is a specification, a prosecutor has to go into the grand jury and present evidence that, in the plain meaning of the statute, a person has been convicted or pleaded guilty to committing on or after, et cetera. That's past tense. It is. We both agree that there's a plain meaning to the statute. Unfortunately, we disagree as to what the plain meaning is. That is clearly stated in the past tense.
Can you help me with the purpose of the date? Does January 1, 97 mark a time when we're going to start having sexually violent offenders?
Your Honor,
or
I have
how do you interpret that?
I've pondered that, and to be honest with you, I don't want to presume what the legislature was intending, except perhaps that date is in there to alleviate any ex post facto concerns you would have over individuals being treated differently or more harshly prior to the date of the statute.
But this talks about an individual who is convicted after that date. So does that eradicate all prior convictions? Is that your view of that?
No, Your Honor, because if you find in determining whether or not the specification is proven beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yes.
It is in the one of the subsections, one of the factors you can consider are prior convictions, and there's no limitation on the date.
Yes,
there.
But the conviction apparently must come after January 1st of 97.
Correct.
Is that your view as well?
That's my view as well, Your Honor, and like I said, it may be because of ex post facto concerns. It could be because that's when many provisions in Senate Bill 2 took effect, and so to effectuate consistency and truth in sentencing, that's when we start with this particular sentencing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judge. The plain meaning, as I was saying, is or the statute is stated in the past tense. If you adopt the state's position, then essentially every rape case, which is a violent sexual offense, automatically opens the door to the predator specification. And it affords complete discretion in the prosecuting authority as to what sentence this defendant will get. Because what will happen is, as was argued in this case at sentencing, there was the victim was threatened at knife point. Well, that's a form of torture, coercion, abuse. That's inherent in many rape cases, and so you are effectively declaring life sentences for all first-time offenders. And as the state conceded in her brief, Mr. Smith, who is far from being a poster child for leniency, is nonetheless a first-time offender.
I want to go back to an earlier statement you made because it kind of struck a chord. This sexual violent predator specification is not a notification clause, right?
Correct.
It's a sentence enhancement.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So whether they're found to be guilty of the specification or not doesn't change the notice requirements. Those go back to the other statute on Megan's Law and the findings under Megan's Law that require the notification.
That's correct, Your Honor. And in fact, even a first-time offender, if he is found to be a sexual predator, will be subject to the lifetime registration requirements, the 90-day notification requirements. All those will still append to his classification.
So this as really a sexual deals predator. With how much time an offender would get. And your argument is that if we interpret it the way the state wants, every single first-time offender now becomes, in essence, could be categorized as a repeat offender and subject to a lifetime sentence.
I don't know that you would call them a repeat offender,
correct.
But they would be subject to a lifetime offense, even a first-time offender. And that's part of the problem with the state's argument as well. When you read Section 2971, I would submit it's clear that the legislature wanted to impose a lifetime sentence on the repeat offender. That's the purpose for the enhancement. It's not to ensnare the first-time offender and give the prosecution a wide range of sentencing options available. That should be the province of the trial court and of a jury determining whether or not the specification exists. So the intent of the statute, I would submit, was to get to the repeat offenders. Now, the state has argued that the clear intent is to protect the public, just as Megan's Law in 2950 does. But I would submit to the court that's true in any enhancement statute, in gun specifications, in various murder specifications. The idea is primarily to punish, and this court's found they're punitive in nature when it's a sentencing enhancement provision, but it's also obviously to protect the public. So we're not disputing that part of the purpose of this is to protect the public. It does. What we're disputing is the legislative intent, which is to permanently remove, or as permanently as possible, from society those offenders who have repeatedly violated or committed a sexually violent offense. I would also note that the prosecution's talked about the discretion involved in Chapter 2971 in terms of the parole board and other post-sentencing situations. If you adopt the state's interpretation of the statute, you've effectively eliminated the trial judge's discretion because they no longer have the discretion to sentence the offender to anything from life. So this really limits discretion in the trial court rather than enhances it. Now, the state has talked at length about the repeat violent offender specification and how a ruling in favor of requiring a prior conviction or of interpreting the sexual predator specification to require a prior offense will negatively impact the repeat violent offender. And I would submit to the court that's just not so. Again, based on the plain meaning of the repeat offender statute. And in fact, I would submit that statute highlights the differences between the two statutes and argues in favor of the interpretation of the Court of Appeals below, because it specifically references the fact that has been convicted and is being sentenced for committing certain offenses. That "and is being sentenced for committing" does not appear in the sexually violent predator specification.
Well, doesn't that in some ways support the prosecution's point that if the legislature wanted to enhance sentencing possibilities, as they did in the violent offender and repeat violent offender, you know, the language specifically says you have to have one offense and then you have to have the current offense. That language is, according to the prosecutor's case, lacking here, which then opens the door for his interpretation that the legislature didn't want to make sure that there had to be one offense and then a subsequent offense.
Well, Your Honor, as with many of the statutes relied upon by the state, you can parse them and pick parts of them and say they support that interpretation. But the converse of the repeat offender statute is the fact that the legislative body did include "and is being sentenced for committing," so that it's unmistakably clear that it's referring to the underlying offense before the trial court.
I understand that, and you know, it would be great if the legislature would have been a little more clear in the statute that we're grappling with right now. But the argument that in one case, when they wanted to make it abundantly clear that you have to have this conduct in order to be eligible for this enhancement, in other words, a conviction, one or more convictions, and being sentenced for the case that is before the crime and conviction that is immediately on this date and time before the court. And that is all lacking in the enhancement under 2971.
Well, I understand what Your Honor's saying, but when you're interpreting a criminal statute, you can't by implication add something or subtract something. It has to be strictly construed against the state. So if the state's going to try and rely on this to demonstrate by implication that the legislative meant for the sexually violent predator statute to refer to the instant underlying offense, then they've got to come up with something that is more unequivocal than this, which contains the reference back to the underlying offense. The plain meaning of the sexually violent predator statute as it stands now is it's stated in the past tense, has been convicted of. It doesn't refer to "and is being sentenced for," as does the repeat offender statute. So I would submit to the court that that's conclusive proof that there is a distinction between the two in that the underlying offense won't do it. You cannot be sentenced essentially as a repeat offender without that qualification, without that clause, and is being sentenced for committing that underlying offense.
If assuming that we would affirm the Court of Appeals and the conviction, the underlying conviction, is upheld, what is next for your client and for the state?
Judge, we would, in accord with the third district's orders, if this court affirmed that decision, we'd go back to the trial court, and the trial court would resentence Mr. Smith. Now, Mr. Smith was convicted of two first-degree felonies, both of which carried 10 years in jail, so the trial court would still have a means to sentence him to a significant amount of time, up to 20 years. But the lifetime tail would be taken off.
Since he has been convicted then of a crime that for which he could be determined to be a sexually violent predator, can the state bring that issue up after he's been convicted? Can the court can the trial court be requested to then declare him a sexual predator?
He can be declared a sexual predator,
Not in this proceeding, but can there be a new proceeding filed in which mm-hmm. in which he can could then be declared a sexual predator or a sexually violent predator?
No, Your Honor, because he wouldn't qualify, because he hasn't been convicted or he wasn't convicted. I understand what you're saying, but that would be...
That's my question. I understand the argument that you can't use the indictment as a... You can't charge him in the indictment with being a sexually violent predator because he hasn't yet been convicted, but now he's been convicted. What are the state's rights now?
Well, the state's rights are to advocate for the maximum sentence, but he can't. In essence, what happens is that specification is dismissed for because there's not sufficient evidence to convict him. So that no longer, the specification is a nullity at this point because he doesn't have a prior conviction.
In other words, they can't bring a new charge in the future alleging just the specification now that he's got a conviction.
That's correct, Your Honor.
If the only purpose for the specification is enhancement and he's already been sentenced, convicted and sentenced, I question the point of doing a follow-up. And I would agree with you that you've got to join these two statutory requirements simultaneously.
Yes, Your Honor. But we do need to go back to the trial court because the trial court, when it sentenced Mr. Smith originally, was considering the fact that he would be doing or could potentially do life in prison. So in fairness to the state, we would need to go back, and the trial court now would have to determine whether or not the sentences, the two first-degree felonies, should run consecutively and make the findings appropriate to 2929.14. Mm-hmm. Your Honor, I see that my time is expiring even as I speak. If there aren't any questions, I'll be seated. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hare. Mr. Perry, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just one quick comment about the defense's position that interpreting the state's position would open the floodgates to every person charged with rape. That's not the case. In my 5 years as a prosecutor, I indicted scores of sex offenders. I indicted two sexually violent predators. This court held in Jones that if the person's acquitted on specification, and that's something we have to prove beyond reasonable doubt, if they're acquitted, when they get out of prison, they don't even have to register. So that's not a risk that we're going to run unless we're pretty sure that we can make the conviction on the specification. So it's not going to open the floodgates. It's intended for people like this defendant who committed a sex offense against a minor child, spent 10 years in prison, and then within 2 years of his release, he does this. This is not your usual sex offense. This is a person who is likely to commit future sexually oriented offenses. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.